The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're getting into something really practical, actually. A system used by some of the biggest names out there, Google, Intel, you name it.
That's right. We're talking about OKRs. Objectives and key results.
And we're basing this on John Doerr's big book on the subject, Measure What Matters.
It's such a critical topic because, well, Doerr isn't just pushing another management trend. He's tackling a really fundamental problem.
We get this.
The gap, you know, the gap between having a great strategy, a great idea, and actually making it happen. Execution.
Yeah, the classic strategy versus execution problem. Happens everywhere.
Exactly. And OKRs, they're presented as the bridge, the way to connect the vision from the top all the way down to what people do day to day.
Right.
It clarifies everyone's role and the goal they're shooting for.
And this isn't just for tech giants, right? That's the interesting part.
Not at all. The claim is it works whether you're running a huge company, a nonprofit, maybe even managing your own personal goals. It's about getting results systematically.
Okay, so before we get into the how, let's talk about the who. Yeah. John Doerr.
Right. So Doerr is, well, he's a legend in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Venture capitalist, partner at Kleiner Perkins for ages.
Back some pretty big names.
Oh, yeah. Amazon, Google, Twitter, Intuit.
Mm-hmm.
The list goes on. But his connection to OKRs is really personal. It's not just theoretical for him.
How so?
He learned the system firsthand. Back in the 70s, he was at Intel.
Okay.
And his mentor was Andy Grove.
Andy Groves, the CEO.
Yes, very same. Grove is often called the father of OKRs. He took earlier ideas about management by objectives and really refined them into this focused, measurable system at Intel.
Wow. So Doerr learned it from the source.
Directly. And then, and this is kind of the killer app for OKR's reputation.
Yeah.
Doerr is the one who introduced OKRs to Google.
No way. When was this?
1999. Think about it. Google was tiny then. Fewer than 40 people.
So he brought this system, learned at old school Intel, to this explosive startup.
Exactly. He pitched it to Larry Page and Sergey Brin, and they adopted it. It became, you know, fundamental to how they managed that insane growth and kept innovating.
That's quite the endorsement. So he's seen it work from both sides, the established giant and the disruptive newcomer.
Right. He comes at it as someone who was taught the system and then became its biggest champion. He understands the core principles and how to adapt them.
Okay, so let's get into the book itself, Measure What Matters. What's the core idea Doerr's trying to get across?
Well, it's partly a how-to guide, definitely. It lays out the mechanics, but it's also kind of a manifesto.
A manifesto for?
For ambition, transparency, and disciplined execution. He genuinely seems to believe this system can unlock potential pretty much anywhere. He wants to take it beyond just the Silicon Valley crowd. Make it accessible.
All right, let's break down the actual formula then. OKR, objective and key results.
It sounds simple and it kind of is on the surface.
So the objective, the O, that's the what, right?
Exactly. It's the goal. Where do you want to go? It needs to be significant, something concrete, action-oriented,
yeah.
And importantly, inspirational, something people can rally behind. Defines the overall direction for a role or team.
Okay, makes sense. Big picture stuff and the key results. The KRs.
That's the how. How will you know you're getting there? These have to be specific, measurable, verifiable, and time-bound, usually set quarterly.
Measurable is the key there, I guess.
Absolutely critical. Doerr hammers this point home. If you achieve all your key results, you must have achieved your objective. It forces you to quantify things. No more vague goals like improve brand awareness.
Right. It has to be something like increase website traffic by 15% or launch 3 new product features. Specific metrics.
Precisely. It moves you from wishful thinking to a concrete plan with benchmarks. That clarity itself is a huge benefit. How you know your role contributes to the objective.
But Doerr argues there's more to it than just writing them down. He talks about these 4 superpowers.
Yeah, the superpowers are really the core benefits you get when you implement OKRs properly.
Yeah.
They're what make the system work culturally.
Okay, let's unpack them. Superpower number 1.
Focus and commit to priorities. This might be the most important one.
Why is that?
Because most organizations, maybe most people, try to do too much at once. Their focus gets scattered.
Guilty as charged.
Right. So OKRs force you, especially leaders, to make hard choices. What really matters right now, typically you limit yourself to maybe 3 to 5 objectives per cycle.
3 to 5, that sounds restrictive.
It is, but that's the point. It forces commitment. You can't focus on everything, so you focus intensely on the vital few. defines the core goals for your role.
Is there an example of this?
Yeah, the book uses Intuit. When they needed to shift their entire business from desktop software to cloud and mobile, that was a huge pivot.
Massive undertaking.
Totally. And they used OKRs to get the entire company laser-focused on that single strategic goal. It stopped different teams from just, you know, wandering off on their own pet projects. Yeah. Everyone knew the main priority.
Okay, focus. Got it. Superpower number two.
Align and connect for teamwork. This one relies on something Doerr calls radical transparency.
Radical transparency sounds intense.
It means OKRs aren't secret. They're public within the organization. Everyone can see everyone else's OKRs, from the CEO down to interns.
Everyone's. Really, doesn't that create noise or weird competition?
They could, if not managed well. But the idea is connection, not just visibility. When goals are transparent, you can align them. Teams can see how their objectives link to the department's objectives, which link to the company's top-level objectives.
Ah, so it combats silos. You see how your specific role and its goals fit into the bigger puzzle.
Exactly. It breaks down those walls. People understand how their work contributes. He mentions MyFitnessPal using this transparency to get product and engineering teams tightly aligned during their big growth phase. Everyone pulling together towards shared, visible goals.
Okay, so we're focused. We're aligned. What's number three?
Track for accountability. OKRs aren't set it and forget it. They're living things. Meaning you need regular check-ins, maybe weekly, bi-weekly. How are we progressing on those key results? And then, at the end of the cycle, there's scoring.
Scoring. Okay, this sounds like performance reviews.
Ah, but it's different, or should be. Usually, KRs are scored on a scale like 0.0 to 1.0, but the purpose is learning and reflection, not judgment or punishment.
Okay. But if you're scoring people, doesn't that just make them set really easy goals they know they can hit to get that 1.0?
That's the big danger. And Doerr addresses it head on. That's why he makes a critical distinction between two types of OKRs.
Which are?
Committed OKRs and aspirational OKRs.
Okay, what's the difference?
Committed OKRs are the essentials, things that absolutely must get done. Think operational stuff, meeting compliance targets, launching a key product on time. These you really aim for a 1.0 score on. They're commitments.
Right. Non-negotiables.
Exactly. But aspirational OKRs, those are the big ambitious goals, the moonshots, stretching beyond what seems easily possible.
And how is the scoring different there?
This is the counterintuitive part. For an aspirational OKR, hitting a score of, say, 0.6 or 0.7, that's often considered a success.
Wait, hitting 60 or 70% is a success?
Yes. Because if you consistently hit 1.0 on your aspirational goals, it probably means you weren't aiming high enough.
Ah, I see. A lower score proves the goal was genuinely challenging, pushing the boundaries. It stretched the team or the individual in their role.
Precisely. It encourages ambition, which leads directly into the fourth superpower.
Which is?
Stretch for amazing. This is all about fostering that culture of ambition, of shooting for the moon. Setting those really hard aspirational goals drives innovation.
But that sounds risky. If people are encouraged to aim so high, they might only hit 70%. How do you avoid them feeling penalized?
That is the crucial point. You absolutely need psychological safety.
Meaning people feel safe to fail. Or not fail, but not hit 1.0.
Exactly. And the key mechanism Doerr insists on is separating aspirational OKR scores from compensation and performance reviews, at least directly.
So my bonus doesn't depend on hitting 1.0 on my moonshot goal.
Ideally, no. Because if it does, what happens?
You play it safe, you set goals, you know you can nail. Sandbagging, right?
Exactly. Doerr calls it sandbagging. You set low targets to guarantee the reward. By decoupling ambitious goals from direct, immediate rewards or punishments, you free people up to take risks, to really stretch.
And Google is the poster child for this, I assume?
Totally. Think about projects like Gmail or Chrome. Those didn't come from playing it safe. They came from a culture that explicitly encouraged setting wildly ambitious OKRs and accepted that sometimes you wouldn't hit them, but you'd learn a ton in the process. Failure in pursuit of greatness was okay.
Okay, those four superpowers, focus, align, track, and stretch, they make a lot of sense together, but it sounds like it requires more than just putting goals on paper.
Oh, absolutely. It's a cultural shift. And Doerr emphasizes some key themes that underpin the whole thing.
Like what?
Well, the first one is almost a mantra in the book. Execution over ideas.
Ideas are easy. Execution is everything. I think I saw that quote.
That's the one. The book just constantly reinforces that discipline, that focus on actually doing the work needed to achieve the goal is what separates success from failure. OKRs provide the structure for that discipline. defining the execution path for your role.
Makes sense. What else?
The human side. OKRs don't work in a vacuum. Doer introduces this concept of CFRs.
CFRs, another acronym.
Yeah, sorry. It stands for conversations, feedback, and recognition.
Okay.
The idea is that OKRs need to be paired with continuous, high-quality conversations between managers and employees. Regular feedback, coaching, and recognizing effort and progress. It's meant to replace the old, often dreaded annual performance review with ongoing dialogue. Makes the goals and roles feel supported.
So less about a yearly judgment, more about continuous improvement and support.
Exactly. It makes the manager more of a coach for achieving those OKRs.
And that links back to the psychological safety thing too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. That's another key theme. Ambition and psychological safety. You need both. You encourage stretch goals, but you have to create an environment where it's safe to pursue them, even if you don't fully achieve them. Separating them from comp is vital for that.
Got it. Any other big themes?
Just the universal applicability. We've mentioned Google a lot, but Doer includes case studies from nonprofits like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Bono's One campaign.
So it's not just for making profit.
No, it's about achieving objectives, whatever they may be. For the Gates Foundation, the KRs might be about vaccination rates or disease reduction, not revenue. It's adaptable. It works for defining roles and goals in almost any context.
The book seems quite quotable, too. You mentioned one already.
Yeah, Doer has a knack for these punchy lines that capture the essence. They're good rules of thumb.
Give us another good one.
Okay, related to the key results needing to be measurable. It's not a key result if it doesn't have a number.
Ooh, direct. I like it. Cuts through the fluff.
Totally. It forces that quantification. You can't just say improve things. You have to say how much by when. Makes the goal concrete.
Any others that stand out?
There's one about the aspirational goals, the moonshots. It goes something like, aspirational goals can be daunting, but with the freedom to fail, they can also be liberating.
Liberating. That connects back to the psychological safety idea. If you remove the fear, people feel free to aim higher.
Precisely. It unlocks that potential to stretch.
Okay, so let's bring this down to earth. How can people listening apply this? It's not just for CEOs, right?
Definitely not. For individuals, it's a great way to tackle personal goals. Instead of just saying, I want to get fit.
Yeah, the classic vague resolution.
Right. You set an objective. Achieve peak cardiovascular fitness this year. Then key results. Run a 10K race by June. Average 3 cardio workouts per week. Lower resting heart rate to X by December. See, specific, measurable. Defines your fitness role and goals.
Much more likely to happen than just get fit. Okay, what about other areas?
Well, we touched on the social sector. For nonprofits, it's huge for demonstrating impact. A charity focused on education could have KRs like increase third grade reading scores by 10% or provide tutoring services to 500 students. It helps them track progress and show donors their money is working.
And for managers or team leads?
It changes their role, really. Instead of just assigning tasks, they use OKRs to ensure everyone on the team understands the strategic objective their work supports.
So it gives context and purpose.
Yes. It shifts the conversation from, did you finish the report, to how is the report helping us achieve this key result which supports this objective? It connects the daily grind to the bigger picture, makes everyone's role clearer.
Okay, wrapping up then. What's your biggest takeaway from diving into Measure What Matters? What surprised you or really stuck with you?
For me, I think it's the emphasis on the CFRs, the conversations, feedback, recognition. It hammered home that OKRs aren't just a spreadsheet exercise. They really depend on changing how people interact, how managers coach, and how transparent the whole organization becomes. The system is almost secondary to the cultural shift it requires. It's about shared understanding of roles and goals.
Yeah, I get that. For me, I think it was the counterintuitive idea about scoring aspirational goals, that hitting 0.7 is success.
The acceptable failure aspect.
Exactly. It reframes ambition. It suggests we actually learn and progress more by really stretching ourselves, aiming for that 1.0, even if we only reach 0.7, than we do by just setting safe targets we know we can hit. It encourages genuine striving, not just checking boxes. That feels powerful.
Yeah. Aiming high and learning from the shortfall. It's a different mindset.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.